Track 10. Time moves quickly in the natural world. Working on this month's column in his garden in spring, our writer reflects on how dramatically things can change in nature in the space of a few weeks.
Magazines are odd things. They require a huge amount of behind-the-scenes work by many people to get all the words in the right places, accompanied by the right photos, by the right date. As a result, a columnist, in this case, your humble nature columnist, starts writing copy 2 or 3 months prior to an edition reaching readers. It's late April as I sit to write about July. I'm in my little garden shed, dressed, I admit, a little eccentrically. My shorts and flip-flops came out of storage several days ago, and it's unlikely I'll wear long trousers for anything but formal events until October. But it's April, and the breeze is cold, so I have 2 thick hoodies on. However, the sun is fierce, so I have a bucket hat low over my eyes. Whenever I can, I work outside. As a writer on nature, it would be very strange if I were to prefer sitting indoors. I have never, since childhood, been able to listen to music while either reading or writing. Music demands all my concentration. I imagine, with no evidence, that music and words occupy the same region on my brain. Nature, on the other hand, is different. As I type, sitting on my late best friend's bench in my leafy back garden, I can hear a greenfinch overhead. I have heard numerous linnets since I came out to write, but this is the first greenfinch. Though linnet and greenfinch flight calls are rather similar, my brain is perfectly capable of identifying them, among all the other ambient sounds around me, while still conjuring words for my fingers to type at speed. I can hear a distant chaffinch flight call now, and house sparrows are chirping from the eaves of every cottage in my lane. A moment ago, a swallow was singing overhead, and a blackbird has just joined in. A queen common carder bee is feeding from green alkanet beside my bench, and the air hums to the tune of tapered drone flies. My garden is a joy today, but these are April noises, April sights. Every one of these species will still be present in my garden and across Norfolk in July, but their lives by then will be very different. As if to prove my point, a drake mallard has just flown over. I didn't look up, but I could tell he was drake by his breathy, slightly seedy quack. Besides, it's April, and all the ducks are either on eggs or already leading downy ducklings. As for my breathy drake, his life will indeed be different come July. Unlike the majority of birds, waterfowl, capable as they are of retreating to water for safety, molt all their flight feathers in one go. For 10 days or a fortnight in July, my breathy mallard will be flightless, as will the grey-legged geese now plucking the spring grass by the pond outside my front door. By July, every other wildlife around me will be different too. The long-streamered swallow, who was singing as I sat to write, arrived only a week ago. Yesterday I saw him with a female, and soon, if it ever rains, they will make their messy nest of mud and grass. Given a kindly spring and early summer, it's likely that by the time you hear this article in July, this pair of swallows will have fledged one brood of chicks and will be laying a second clutch. Swallows make the most of summer. So by July, our mallard drake will be flightless, mottled brown and secretive, having lost the elaborate finery he wore for winter's courtship. And our swallows will have nested once already. The blackbird I just heard singing will be well into second nesting too, as long as the dinky local sparrowhawk doesn't take him one early morning as he flutes the day into being. I have not seen a butterfly today, but yesterday I saw brimstones, peacocks and a holly blue. The brimstones and peacocks spent last winter as hibernating adults. They must mate now and lay their eggs. Peacocks on stinging nettles, brimstones on purging or alder buckthorn. In July, these overwintered adults will be spent, and their offspring, caterpillars or even pupae. These will emerge as adults in late summer, and like their parents, overwinter to breed next spring. The holly blue, by contrast, breeds once now, and the resulting generation breeds again in autumn. Their offspring overwinter as pupae, emerging as adults in next spring's welcome sun. All of these animals, and the plants surrounding me, will be at very different stages of their lives in July. We plodding long-lived humans will broadly be the same. A little more tanned, perhaps. A little leaner from summer walks, but essentially the same. And yet this longevity and our prodigious intellect grant us an exceptional blessing. Whereas all the other species struggling around us for survival, the linnet clattering overhead again, even as I type, are locked into an annual cycle with little choice as how they lead their lives, we have abundant choice. We humans can decide who we want to be in relation to every ethical and environmental issue. It's 10 weeks until the words I'm typing now will fall, with thousands of other skillfully crafted words, onto doormats across our sainted county. By then I won't have molted feathers, nor fledged a brood of chicks, nor yet laid my eggs on alder buckthorn. But I can have done 1,000 positive things for nature, and I intend to. We humans share this bounteous planet with countless other lives. We have the privilege of choosing how we treat them, how much space we give them, how our buying and our living have an impact on them, and whether we support the people who treasure and protect them. I know what things I will have done for nature come July.